And good afternoon. It is a Thursday, November 9th, 2017, 15 minutes past 1 o'clock. Beautiful fall, brisk day here in Ohio. If you want a fall day, you could not ask for a better day than today. Thanksgiving right around the corner. Scott Spears here with you. A little programming note very quickly. Tomorrow morning, a special edition of the Now program, 11:15 a.m. Barry Farber is the guest, the pioneer of conservative talk. Before Rush Limbaugh, before Sean Hannity, there was Barry Farber. Tomorrow morning, 11:15 a.m. to talk about national politics. And we want to thank Clarence B. Jones in hour number one, co-author of the I Have a Dream speech, Dr. Martin Luther King. He was his friend, he was his attorney, he was his advisor. And to come on and talk about the FBI papers in regard to Martin Luther King Jr., we thank Clarence B. Jones for coming on in hour number one. And now to hour number two. It's always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones a person who is on the campaign trail right now as she seeks to be the Republican nominee for the governor of Ohio, in which that election will take place in less than a year, our current Lieutenant Governor, Mary Taylor. Lieutenant Governor, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Always good to speak with you. How goes the campaign trail here in Ohio?
It is. It's very busy and very good. I have found that Ohioans are much more engaged in this campaign for governor, being that it's a year away, than I would have expected. So I think that's great.
I want to talk about the opioid epidemic here, but just before we get to that, your thoughts on Tuesday's election? Not a good night for Republicans around the country. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I guess, you know, it wasn't a great night, and, you know, clearly looking at Virginia and New Jersey, probably tough races to win. But I think, for me, the takeaway is, I don't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, or what you call yourself from a political perspective, I think it's what's most important for us as candidates is to make sure that we are engaging with the general public to understand what their concerns are, what they're worried about, and to include them as we develop solutions to address the problems and concerns that they have. And so I think as a candidate, again, no matter what side of the aisle you sit on, you really, really need to be engaging your constituency.
For those who weren't paying attention the other night, New Jersey and Virginia elected Democratic governors. The president has said, President Trump, that you have to, well, embracing him, he thinks, is a good thing to get elected as a Republican governor. Do you think you have to embrace President Trump to be elected next year?
Well, I can tell you, based on the poll results that I have seen in the course of the last couple of months, and including one that we did internally on my campaign, President Trump still has extraordinarily high favorable ratings amongst Republican primary voters in the state of Ohio. And so, of course, right now, when I'm thinking about a Republican primary, those are the numbers that I am focused on. But what I think needs to happen is we need to embrace the change that I believe Americans spoke pretty loud and clear that they wanted. They wanted Obamacare to be repealed and replaced, which unfortunately has not yet happened. They want tax reform. They want the borders to be safe and protected. And, you know, one of the critical points in the addiction plan that I'm rolling out today is that we stop these drugs, these illegal drugs that are coming into our country, stop them at the borders. And so, I mean, to me, that's the message I believe Americans spoke pretty loud and clear. And looking at Ohio, I think Ohio was pretty clear as well.
Final question on this. As you say, which is true, President Trump is still very favorable with Ohio primary voters. Our current governor, our outgoing governor, John Kasich, doesn't seem to be in lockstep with President Trump on health care and many other things, immigration. I believe not too long ago he said, send the immigrants here. If President Trump wanted to send them out of the country, the people who have paid to be here, that is. Do you agree with Governor Kasich on that or Governor Trump or President Trump?
So, you know, this question is always a tough one to answer in the way that what I'm trying to do in this campaign is identify and describe and define who Mary Taylor is. And I've had a great opportunity to serve with John Kasich for the last 7 years, and I feel like we've made great progress in the state, cut taxes by $5 billion, put nearly a half a million Ohioans back to work. So I'm really focused on Ohio solutions and not really trying to define myself in the context of who John Kasich is or who President Donald Trump is. And I'm really trying to define myself more as individual Mary Taylor, what I bring to the table, and what my plans and proposals are as I am seeking the Republican nomination to become the next governor of Ohio.
Would you ask either of them to campaign for you?
I'll tell you what, I would welcome the help and support of great Republicans all over the state and the country. So I would not have a problem with the support of either of those individuals as I am together what I think is a pretty comprehensive policy agenda for the challenges that I think Ohio continues to face, but also what I believe are the real solutions.
And I promise my next question is going to opioids, but do you agree with Governor, you mentioned immigration there. Do you agree with Governor Kasich, his quote on CBS this morning a few weeks ago, that if you pay to be here, but you are an immigrant, come to Ohio? Would you have said the same thing?
What I have said with regard to immigration is that we have laws that should be followed, and we need, as Ohioans and Americans, to know who is coming to our country and what their intentions are for being here. So we have borders, and there's a reason to have borders. And just, again, speaking very specifically to the addiction rollout that I will be announcing here in the next hour and a half or 2 hours, we need to stop these drugs at our border, and we need to understand who's coming across that border, and are they coming here to do us harm?
So would you have said what Governor Kasich said?
I don't know that I would have. I don't have the specific quote, nor did I actually see it, but I just think this is one of those areas where he and I may have a difference, and I think what makes us great Ohioans and great Americans is that we can respect each other's differences.
Absolutely. And because of this, we all know that addiction is very close to your heart. I think all Ohioans know about your story, your family's story. Today is a big day for you, and you're rolling out something very important. Tell us about it when it comes to drugs here in Ohio, opioids.
So we have several major components to this. We're going to further change the culture around prescribing opiates. I want to drive education about addiction into the baseline education and continuing education curriculum for all healthcare professionals in Ohio. I want to make sure that those that are in our medical universities and colleges, those in pharmacy schools, other healthcare professionals truly understand what it means to provide healthcare services to folks living in recovery. Just that one comes from a personal experience my son had with a chronic case of bronchitis. And I think it's important to continue to look at our opiate prescribing guidelines and make improvements as the time marches on. I think this administration has done an extraordinary job of changing prescribing protocols for acute pain and really cracking down on the number of opiates. But we also need to look for alternative ways to treat pain. And in a Governor Taylor administration, we are, in fact, going to, through our own healthcare system, make sure that we are driving better, different approaches to treating pain. Also, I want to jumpstart the private sector treatment system and make sure that we are building out an entire robust, effective, and innovative treatment infrastructure here in the state of Ohio. As governor, I will propose and lead a 10-year up to $1 billion bond initiative to incentivize the private sector to create that robust treatment infrastructure that we need in Ohio. I also want to make sure that I continue to build on the relationships that I have with President Trump and his administration and look for and I will propose a Medicaid waiver that allows us, hopefully we'll get the flexibility that we need as a state to start addressing or to continue to address the crisis that we face here in the state of Ohio. I want to continue to work with law enforcement to keep drugs off our streets. Part of the bond issue will be designated towards funding boots on the ground, providing our local law enforcement officers with the resources they need in order to hold drug dealers accountable. I think it's important that we continue to support law enforcement, but we also need to give them the tools and the resources they need to get these drug dealers off our streets.
One of the things I'm hearing from people in Ohio is that people are getting arrested for this. People are going to jail. People are getting felonies. And then they do get treatment, but they find it hard to get a job. What's your thoughts on that?
I have heard that that is, in fact, the case all too many times. You've got an individual who's trying to live a sober, happy, healthy life and can't get a job because they have a felony. So when I think about what civil justice reform looks like, criminal justice reform looks like, we certainly are going to be looking at how do we provide those who have found themselves entangled with the law, because of their addiction crisis, how do we truly not only provide them the opportunity for a treatment, the opportunity to live their happy, healthy, sober life, but that means that we have to look at how we are providing not only the addiction treatment, but then what type of opportunities and hope are we giving to them if they have been entangled with the legal system and find themselves with a felony or something that prevents them from getting a job. So when I think about future policy rollouts and looking at our criminal justice system, I think this is something we truly need to take a serious look at, because ultimately at the end of the day, we need to not only give Ohioans the opportunity to get through this addiction and have access to quality treatment, we also want to make sure we're doing what we can to restore hope so that they can live their God-given potential.
One of your opponents in the Republican primary is Attorney General Mike DeWine. Right now, he is talking about this issue as well, as he is suing the state attorney general, is suing opioid companies. Do you agree with that?
So I think, unfortunately, that the attorney general is kind of late to the game and has been the attorney general for the last 7 years. And as attorney general, I think there are many things he could have done that would have been helpful in this addiction crisis. Suing a drug company isn't going to provide the hope and the healing that Ohioans deserve, and that I, with my proposal, am planning to drive through innovative solutions using the private sector. Government is not a solution. Hiring a trial attorney and filing a lawsuit against a bunch of drug companies is not ultimately going to drive the type of hope and healing that I believe Ohioans not only need, but they deserve. To me, government is not the solution to this crisis, but it has a role to play, and our solution is going to come through our local communities, through our faith-based groups, through the work and extraordinary efforts of law enforcement and our first responders who are out there every day dealing with this crisis. And so that's why my proposal truly is focused on providing Ohioans the real opportunities they need to restore the hope that they deserve.
A question that has been asked of me is, they know the Attorney General is suing the opioid companies, but does that stop doctors from prescribing them? How much of this lies with the doctors and how much lies with the companies?
Well, I think you really just hit the nail on the head. Is suing the company that manufactures the drug is not going to ultimately stop it from being prescribed to the patient. It also is not going to advance, the goal of trying to make sure that as healthcare consumers, we are individually much more informed about the type of healthcare that we're receiving, which is why, my proposal is focused on the prescribing protocols, for example, and making, taking the next step where this administration has put in place some pretty prescriptive protocols around how opiates are prescribed for acute pain. We have to always look for ways to make sure that we're getting excess opiates off the street and that, Ohioans can be informed about the health care that they're receiving. But we also have to incentivize, and we also have to drive alternative ways to treat pain and not just rely on the opiates. So at the end of the day, hiring a trial attorney and suing the drug companies is not going to provide the type of access to treatment, access to health care, access to good job opportunities, and really cracking down on the things, getting the drug dealers off our streets, supporting our law enforcement officers. I mean, those are the solutions to deal with this crisis.
I guess my final question would be, because I'm here in the state, and I would say that drugs right now are more important than taxes, which is a rarity, when it comes to voters' choices. It's a big issue. Ohio number one, I guess in the country, unfortunately, for overdose deaths when it comes to opiates. Why do you think the Attorney General is doing this now, suing these companies? You said he came late. Why do you think he's doing it now?
Well, you know, unfortunately, when you get involved in politics, sometimes the answer looks a lot political. And, you know, knowing that he's talking about a proposal out of the Attorney General's office, it's certainly something that I would ask the question, you know, where has Mike DeWine been for the last 7 years? And why didn't he, as Attorney General, take substantive, concrete steps to help us deal with this addiction crisis? And again, it just, you know, it looks politically expedient to be filing a lawsuit against drug companies and not really focusing on the things that are actually going to drive the real change and the real hope and the real healing that I believe Ohioans want. I can tell you, as a mom, I can tell you with my family and my personal situation, the crisis and what we have been through, I personally understand what Ohioans all across the state have either gone through or are continuing to go through. And as governor, I'm committed to providing real solutions that actually bring that hope and healing that I believe they deserve.
I appreciate it, Lieutenant Governor. I want to slip one more question in because we got 30 seconds left here. Do you think suing the drug companies will do anything to stop the drug epidemic, have any effect on it?
You know, again, I think that who knows what that lawsuit looks like, who knows when it gets settled, who knows when it gets its day in court. And instead, what I believe Ohioans want are their future, or people who are running campaigns to be the future leader of this state, to be driving home, you know, real solutions to the crisis that we face that are immediate solutions, not solutions that may happen at some point in the future if things go the right way. So, again, that's why I am focused on putting forth substantive solutions that will incentivize the private sector to create market-based solutions to the crisis we face, but also making sure that Ohioans have the type of access to quality care that they need to get through this crisis, and continue to support our law enforcement officers because they are on the ground. They are there. They're in, you know, the everyday dealing with this crisis, and they need the support to be able to do the jobs that I know they want to do. And I know as Ohioans, we expect them to do.
No more important in Ohio issue in Ohio to talk about now than this. I can't thank you enough for coming on. I know it's a busy time, and you're welcome, as are all the other candidates. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Great. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor, there you go. Okay, now we've got 28 minutes left in the show. And your opinion, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Now, what do you think about what Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor had to say in regard to the opioid epidemic here in Ohio? Do you agree with Attorney General DeWine? What do you think about the interview with Clarence Jones on the Martin Luther King Jr. FBI files that have been released? Phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Certainly would love to hear from you and hear what your opinions are on all of these issues. Also, reminding you that tomorrow, Barry Farber, the father of conservative talk radio, will be on at 11:15 tomorrow morning. So we will kick off Friday morning with the Theology Guys with Pastor Brett Cornelius and Pastor Rhett Crabtree at 10:15. 11:15, I will be on with a special edition of the Now program with Barry Farber. At 12 noon, we will have the Exchange Club, Marge Hazlett, Charlie Evers, and myself. And then the Charlie Evers Show will round out the day, round out the week, 1:10 until 3 p.m. tomorrow, Friday. Hope you're having a great time out there. Again, phone lines remain open. 25 minutes left in the program, 35 minutes past the hour. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Now, we had Ed McCants on yesterday. We had new First Ward City Councilman Robert Landon on yesterday. We had the Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor on today, and basically the entire conversation has revolved around the drug issue, opiates. What do you think? is going to happen with this? Where do you think we're going to end up with this whole issue? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give us a ring and we will put you up on the air because we want to hear from you. And again, I extend the invitation to anybody running for governor to come on this program, Democrat, Republican, Independent. If you would like to come on and share your opinion, just shoot me an email, scott@wwgh1071.com, or call the station 740-531-9944. But right now, the phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. Would love to get somebody's opinion on anything, anything else going on in the world that you might have something to say about, anything going on in Marion that you might want to talk about. Veterans Day, right around the corner, Saturday. Tomorrow, Veterans Day, I guess, is being recognized. I know there's an event at the Senior Center tomorrow at noon for the veterans that's free, so I would certainly advise you to attend that. Caller, go ahead.
Hi, Scott.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, you know I always have an opinion of some sort.
I hope so. I hope so.
I enjoyed the thing with the lawyer. I thought that was a very pertinent item.
Well, you know, when I saw the FBI documents about Dr. King, I was confused myself as to why they were released. They didn't have anything to do with Kennedy. What do you make of them?
Well, it dealt with the Kennedy administration.
Yeah, but certainly not directly to do with the assassination.
Not with the assassination. That wasn't necessarily a conspiracy. You know, I was down in Memphis one time. We just took a vacation and went to Memphis. And I walked out by the, we were out walking around. And we were by the place where he was shot. And a black man came up and said, yeah, that's the place where, he says, not that you'd care, but that's where Dr. Martin Luther King was killed. Why did he feel that I didn't care? I mean, I made the effort to go see it.
You know,
I didn't understand that.
I'm glad you make that point because, and heavens knows we've had the discussion, and that's what they are, about statues and slavery and Martin Luther King today. I don't know if you listened to the program yesterday, but...
No, I was out of town yesterday.
Okay. Well, something interesting. It was just a little factoid, but on Tuesday night, during the election coverage, Charlie and I got to discussing Ben Franklin and about how he's probably the most recognized person from the early era of this country that never ran or became president, so he is not as regarded as John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, but certainly very important for his time. So I did some research on Ben Franklin on, yesterday morning before I came on the air. And there was a fact page about Ben Franklin, and there were a lot of interesting things on there that we don't know about him. Of course, we know about the inventor, and we know about his trips to France to get the United States recognized. But one thing I did not know is before the year 1800, he was an abolitionist. And Ben Franklin owned slaves. He owned two slaves. Mm-hmm. And at some point during that, he became diametrically opposed to slavery, and even before he died, tried to get an amendment put into the Constitution, which he helped write, to abolish it, because he thought it was an awful thing. And the fact of that was fascinating was he had a lot of money when he died. He was a wealthy man, and he told his kids, he said, you cannot have your inheritance until you free your slaves upon my death. Now, why is this interesting? Well, this is interesting to me because Ben Franklin was a smart man. He did own slaves in his life. But he, at some point, he didn't like it. And this is a guy who wrote the Constitution, wanted to amend it not long after it was written, and put the pressure on his kids to do something they obviously did not want to do in their life to get their inheritance. Now, why is this important? Well, in the conversation of the
Robert E. Lee's and the amendments and the states' rights and George Washington and Thomas Jefferson owning slaves and tearing down statues. This is important to me because we would say Ben Franklin owned slaves, but how many people know that he was also an abolitionist? And we hold up the Constitution.
Well, when did he become an abolitionist, though?
Later in his life.
Yes.
Right. Now, we obviously know Thomas Jefferson had a good relationship with his slaves.
Including one that he made pregnant.
He certainly did. And I would
don't consider that a very moral thing.
Not a moral thing, but it's not chopping feet off or lynching people.
There aren't that many that happened to.
The lynching.
Why would you kill something that was of financial value to you?
Well, it was if they tried to run away or if you tried to buck the system. But what I'm saying, I guess, is that I've never heard, and we certainly get into history now, I've never heard anywhere where George Washington was awful to his slaves. And the slaves
there
in the South...
There were some reports of him whipping him.
Well, he might have done that. But in the South, also being a slave was different because you were in the cotton fields. And it was a much more difficult life. You weren't just cooking and cleaning. You weren't just the housekeeper. You were doing very hard labor at no cost. And this idea of states' rights comes from the Constitution. Well, the Constitution was one of the main authors of that is Ben Franklin. And he felt that amendments were okay. And in fact, one of the amendments that he wanted done in his own life was the abolishment of slavery. So when we back up on this states' rights things and say, well, the South had a reason to do this and Robert E. Lee had the moral high ground, I think if you would have went to the people who drew up the document that would have
what Robert E. Lee did, he had to make a choice between who he was going to support. And when they wanted him to take over the Union Army and go down and fight against his, he said he won't do that.
Yes, I understand, but I guess my question that if you are diametrically opposed to something, why not fight at all? He didn't have to take the job as the general.
He didn't have to, but he was a soldier.
That's okay, but if you don't agree with what they're fighting for, if his point was what you just said, I don't want to fight against my neighbor, then don't fight at all.
Well, that wasn't necessarily a choice for him.
Well, it was a choice, because he made a choice between North and South. He could have made a choice to fight or not to fight. I'm sure Jefferson Davis would have found somebody else to lead the army. If he had chosen to go with the North, they wouldn't have had him anyway.
If he'd chosen to go with the North, the war would have probably been over within a year.
Right. So
the North had such poor generals.
Right. So I guess my...
They were mostly idiots.
Right. But again, my point, I guess, where I'm going here is, yes, it could be true what you say, and probably is. I have no reason to doubt it, that was why he did not fight for the North, because he didn't want to fight against his neighbors.
Yeah, that was his statement.
But he also didn't have to do it at all. He didn't have to take the job, which again makes me think he must have believed somewhat in the cause. Why would you lead people into war if you didn't believe in the cause at all?
His hope was that the thing could have somehow been worked out.
I think all people...
It would have taken a long while for that to happen. Most of the abolitionists were not regarded well by the soldiers who fought for the North, including the generals.
But who fired the first shot here?
The one down at Fort Sumter?
Yeah, the South did.
One of the first shots that were fired basically were Harper's with John Brown.
Well,
now, the person that, you know who was the person that captured and executed Brown?
No.
Robert E. Lee.
Now, why did he do that?
Because at that time they hadn't had the announcement that everyone's leaving. his state of Virginia at that point was still in the Union.
Right, but I guess, again, my question goes back, and, you know, it is what it is now, but why lead an army for a cause you don't believe in? Because the whole reason, the statue issue is not, were you a part of the Confederacy? There were a lot of people who had family members who fought in the Confederacy. The argument is he somebody to be revered? And I think when you take that job to lead that army, you have to believe somewhat in what, I don't think you're doing it just to stay employed, to kill all those people. And another thing about that whole, the Civil War, they did denounce their American citizenship. Now, we will throw a fit today if somebody even kneels for the flag. Dear God, you'll be thrown out on your ear. But can you imagine if these... can you imagine if these football players said, I denounce my American citizenship and still want to live in this country? Which is what the South was doing.
Yeah, that was a much different era. They had slaves in every state. They actually had slaves in every state of the Union
but
at that time.
What was Abraham Lincoln to do, I guess? What was he to do when the South starts to burn flags, denounce their citizenship, try to secede from the Union, appoint their own president? Mm-hmm. What was he to do?
Well, he took the politically, his best deal was to do that. Because he knew that that would disrupt the South quite a bit.
Well, and how would we have ever continued to survive? People forget, we weren't even 100 years old when this is going on.
Right.
We would have been easy pickings for a country on the other side of the ocean to come back if we were now two countries. Think if Great Britain would have made a pact with the South. I mean, America, the Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington government that we all love so much, would have been obliterated.
Speak for yourself there.
Huh?
You have to speak for yourself there. I think there's so many flaws in our country.
Well, we've had to... that's what I don't understand either. We've had to amend the Constitution a whole bunch. So I'm not sure... Because it left out women, too. So I'm not sure why...
Women weren't slaves.
No, but they had no rights.
The whole religious thing at that point, the woman was, she has to plead, pledge that she's going to serve the husband.
Yeah, but as a legal document.
Not as a legal document.
No, but
I'm talking about the religious end of it.
Right, but what I'm saying is, as a legal document, looked over by scholars, the Constitution does not leave women the right to vote. I understand women were more subservient for religious reasons back in the... That's fine. And they can be subservient now for religious reasons if they choose. That's their choice. But I don't understand why they were not given the right to vote.
Well, initially, the only ones that were allowed to vote were property owners.
Well, they were given citizenship.
If you were renting, if you were a person at work for other people and, somehow a servant of theirs, you didn't have any right to vote,
yeah, but
male or not.
Right, but when the change took place, when all people, whether you owned property or not, could
changes
vote...
Changes are always very gradual in politics.
But why were women the last? We're talking not even 100 years ago. We're talking 1920.
I think they were followed later by the American Indians being allowed to vote.
Well,
if not afterwards, it was a very close thing between those two, which was going to be the last group that was legally allowed to vote.
Well, I guess let me say this. When the first woman ran for president, she's an Ohio woman, ran for president, she didn't even have the right to vote. Frederick Douglass was her vice president.
Right, and there was one woman that was actually voted into Congress even before women were allowed to vote.
Right, so I guess my question is...
So she was allowed to run for office.
Right, but I get, as a write-in, pretty much, as a...
But she won.
Right. Which is what I don't understand, because if we're using the religious reason, certainly there were women in the late 1800s and early 1900s that was no longer the case, and they still didn't have the right to vote.
You mean that they were not housekeepers?
Yeah, they were no longer, you know, this woman had already run for president, Frederick Douglass. There were women's suffrage movements already going on. Women during the Civil War took over the home front when the men were going to fight. Still, they had no right to vote. Okay. I don't. I guess I don't understand what the big holdup was there. In the beginning...
A lot of people don't seem to realize that we're not living in that same world that those people lived in.
No, but...
It's an entirely different thing.
But we know pretty much what the 1920 world looked like. We know where that is. Mm-hmm. And that it took so long is...
It was sort of a big issue and sort of a surprise to people that when the Second World War, when the women actually had to go... work in the factories and stuff.
Well,
you know, that was a big change for everyone.
Well, with our time left, I do want to beel back to this Clarence Jones interview. Do you think it matters if Martin Luther King Jr. did this stuff?
No. Who cares?
Why do you think they leaked it?
Between him and his wife.
Why do you think they leaked it?
Why do you think what now?
Why do you think the government leaked it?
I don't know. It's one of those things that, you know, they want full coverage, I suppose. I don't know if there's necessarily a nefarious reason for it. I think it may just be, well, you want it, here it is. Here's a whole bunch of stuff.
But you know what's interesting? If you read it, he wasn't breaking any major laws. He wasn't holding any political office. Why was Hoover investigating him?
Hoover was much a racist as anyone. Even the Kennedys weren't clean and nice about it.
No, but
they used a word that you're not allowed to use anymore.
Right, but
when discussing it.
But yeah, but you know, the Kennedys, I certainly don't condone what J. Edgar Hoover did to a lot of people, but his philosophy for investigating the Kennedys was they have power, and I need to keep my job, and I need to get them to do my bidding. Now, knowing, I'm sure that was part of the reason Kennedy...
Yeah, it was blackmail.
Right, but why with King? What was he going to blackmail him out of doing?
He wanted to... he had no use for King.
Yeah, but what was he going to do? I mean, I guess my question is, he couldn't go to him and say, shape this policy. He couldn't go do that.
I think that's what he had in mind, though. He had files on everyone.
Well, he must have believed King had a lot of power then. And if King did have a lot of power then, he certainly, I think... deserves the day that he has, because I always hear this argument that he doesn't deserve that day. Well, if he had that much power that the FBI compiled that big of a report on him, I certainly think he must have wielded a lot of power.
Well, having a lot of power doesn't necessarily make somebody perfect.
No, it doesn't make him perfect.
No, King's a great person, there's no doubt about it. And like the fellow said, you know, he had more to do with civil rights than anyone. And surprisingly, the second person was probably Johnson, which was a surprise to everyone. You know, here's a Southern guy coming up, and he was pushing through, even with a lot of problems from his own party. He was able to get a lot of it done, which is an amazing thing.
Well, that's what I think is
and
the...
And then he turned around and blew it on Vietnam.
Well, that...
Hey, I do have a comment on the... thing about DeWine.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's a sleazy political move. I think it has nothing to do with reality. DeWine, I don't know. I like a lot of what gets done, but a lot of it is a very self-promoting type of, boy, look at the good thing I just did type of thing with him. I was a little disillusioned with him back when he ran against John Glenn. And Glenn started calling him the little boy or something to that effect. And he was such a wimp to just sit and take it. He didn't try to, you know.
Well, I don't think too many people got away with insulting John Glenn. That's a hard thing to do.
No, Glenn was insulting him.
I understand, but it's hard to go back on John Glenn after being an astronaut and a hero. Certainly, most of the people voting in that election would have been alive during that time.
He probably would have been president if he hadn't fallen down in the bathtub.
I don't know. You know, I
Well, he was. He seemed to be ready, and then he.
His campaign
I don't know
did
what injury
not seem.
He suffered, but he fell down, and then all of a sudden he sort of just dropped out of that.
Well, his I guess I want to say his he didn't seem to run a very good national campaign.
No, but now this has actually happened pretty early in the run there.
Well, his
I was surprised that he didn't, pick up and go forward with it, but he didn't.
I don't know. It's interesting to me because he may have gotten the Democratic nomination. I believe he ran in 80 and 84.
Yeah.
And in 80, he was running against a sitting president and the brother of JFK, so I doubt he would have got the nomination. And in 84... He would have went against Reagan in this the election.
That was tough. Reagan, Reagan was probably one of the, from a political standpoint, one of the better ones we had for the ability to gain the back, the back from the voters. He was a very, very popular president, even though he had his problems too.
Well, I think the two...
there's one fellow that I like to listen to on POTUS on Sunday mornings, who, if it hadn't been for the same thing that McCain got involved in with the when he set all these guys up, and that was Bill Bradley. And he
the
had a show
player.
On there where he actually gets on there and talks to people, and it's a very good show.
It's you know
on Sunday mornings.
Well, you know what I think in the I'm going to try to think of how far I want to go back here. Probably Roosevelt after Roosevelt. So Truman on. I'm going to say probably the presidents who will be regarded the best by time from Truman on, because Roosevelt's in a class by himself. From Truman on, the two that are going to be regarded the best in history. Probably are a Republican and a Democrat, and I think they are Reagan and Obama. Because I think when people go back...
Obama didn't get anything done.
National health care.
National health care, and you see what a mess it is. Oh, I do have a comment to make out of the results of the election.
Okay, but now what would you say Reagan's accomplishment was?
He made people happy.
Well, I think Obama did, too.
We were all pretty down after... Jimmy Carter.
Were we not down after George W. Bush?
Carter was a great guy, a great person.
Yeah, but after W. Bush, we weren't down.
What's that now?
After W. Bush, we weren't in a bad place.
We had
the highest unemployment rate since the Great Depression. I think that's Obama, something he fixed. And I think also you would say killing Osama bin Laden falls under Obama.
We killed one guy, so that's a great feat.
Well, I think killing Hitler would have been a great feat if they had gotten to him. Okay, what was the comment, though, on health care?
Oh, I hope people realize that, that was a very flawed thing, that issue, too. Primarily, from my viewpoint, because we were going to pay that guy from California and all his lawyers to really sort of shake us down, because they made that part of it, that they were to represent us if things weren't going right. But I hope people realize that regardless of what they sit in there, I'm talking to the old people, myself included, the veterans, myself included, we're going to be paying more for our things. You might as well realize it. we are not going to have everything stay the same. We're going to pay more for it.
Well,
I would guarantee it. It's, you know.
Well, I would suspect that'll be back. That it won't be in that way, and I don't think it'll be by the same group. But I think that initiative will come back. To me, that seems very similar to the casino issue, which went down in horrible defeat the first time it was there.
Right.
But they,
now, if they would cut that business out about paying his lawyers to represent the state, because it would cost millions for that.
It's going to be interesting, because next year we are going to elect a governor. And I don't know who that will be, because it's going to be an interesting year, because you would think that Ohio has a history of electing Republican governors.
Oh, but and it's a happy birthday day to someone.
Who's that?
Senator Brown.
Oh, I saw that this morning.
Today is his 65th birthday.
He's a senior, so he gets his retirement now, his Social Security.
There you go.
So, but he's running again next year, so there you go.
I hope so.
Well, hey, thank you for calling in, as always.
Sure thing.
And this is Scott Spears for this day, heading for the dugout.
Nichols. Address, 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number, 740-225-4495. Webpage, cnichols.com.
Hi, I'm Ann.